right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Off the Bench. I am Brandon Carney alongside Pat Gustafson. Pat, the NFL schedules are out. It was an absolute circus. It was the social media Super Bowl. We had some really, really well done videos, and we're going to go over those in a few minutes here. But just to give you guys a breakdown of what this episode is going to hold, we've got our top five schedule release videos. We're going to give you a little preview of week one. We're not going to go through every game. We'll save that for obviously when we get closer to the season and can fully preview them, but just kind of the games that stand out to us. We'll be talking Tom Brady, Dalvin Cook possibly needing a new home, and then we're going to start kind of a series here of fantasy football previews by division. I feel like it's a good way to take up, you know, the next couple months
just
going through each division and just talking about the fantasy relevant guys on those teams. And by the time we're done with it, we'll basically be in actual draft season. A random tight end draft. I know you guys loved what we did with the receivers last week, and we did with the running backs a few weeks back. Ja Morant, we're going to talk about. We're going to go over that nonsense. A little NBA Conference Finals preview, running it back with the Bubble Four that we had in 2020. And then, of course, we'll finish it out with some viewer questions. But first and foremost, Pat, the schedule release videos. Man, those are fun. I did a whole ass Twitch stream about like watching all of them and identifying the best ones. And I want to give my top five in them really quick. I think your top five is fairly similar. There's a decent amount of crossover there. I see one big omission. Actually, you don't have my top two favorite ones, so I'm going to come through the screen and kick your ass right now. You don't have the Lions or the Browns, which is just rude. But I'll just go over them really quickly. I mean, the Falcons and the Rams. Yeah, the Falcons and the Rams, I basically have at number five and number four. I think those were both similar. They were both like very TikTok, you know, scrolling through a feed to reveal each opponent, but they were also very different. The Falcons relied on a lot of TikTok like stars. Like, I recognized basically everybody that was in that video, whereas the Rams did sort of TikTok trends. Like, they touched on basically every subsection of TikTok that you can find, and I thought that was super creative. The Chargers, of course, killing it again with their anime intro.
Unbelievable.
It's funny now that my girlfriend's super into anime, and I wasn't dating her this time last year, so she was able to point out like some of the anime references in there. So there are some weebs in the Chargers social media team, first of all. And then obviously the football references are just all over the place. Like, I'm catching new stuff every time I watched it. I went in to refresh myself today watching it, and their week two game, I think, was against the Titans, and I see they have Derrick Henry like being operated on like he's a machine, and then next to him there's a jar of mayo with a banana, and I'm like, God damn it, like, how do they put so many little details in here? I wonder how long they've been working on these for, but they killed it. The only reason they weren't my favorite is because it was the same concept that they had last year, so I just, you know, slight points off for lack of creativity.
Sure.
But it was still really well done. Number two, I had the Cleveland Browns. Wrestling themed, it was basically a Royal Rumble that they animated, and just such a smart way to do a schedule release, because the Royal Rumble is designed as contestants are coming out every 90 seconds. It's supposed to be, at the end of the day, it's however long they WWE wants it to be for storyline purposes, but you know, wrestlers coming out one by one, and each wrestler represented the teams in some sort of creative way. They were very funny. And then number one, the Detroit Lions. I don't know if anybody listening has as warped of a sense of humor as I do, but the TikToks and videos of the AI voices, like, I'm sure, Pat, you may have seen, like, the presidential ones.
Oh,
where it's Obama,
I am
talking
a subscriber
to Trump.
To the presidential Discord.
The presidential Discord on TikTok is so funny, and this was exactly that. First of all, Dan Campbell sounded like Obama. I don't know what the deal was with that, but his voice in that video sounded
just
like
him. That's what I thought at the beginning, too. I'm like, is this just the presidential Discord? And then...
Yeah, it sounded just like Obama, so that was kind of weird. But the jokes that they made throughout it were just so funny. And again, they packed so many little references into it. Like, the game, the Madden gameplay when they were... They were playing Madden, and then it was like a Discord call of Dan Campbell talking to... Hold on, I think it was their GM, actually. Detroit Lions. His name was Brad. I'm just so not familiar with GMs.
Oh, Brad Holmes?
Okay, Brad Holmes. It was Brad Holmes. I was like, God damn it. I knew it was their GM, but I could not remember his name. I didn't want to get it wrong. But yeah, the jokes they had in there of like Amon-Ra defending his own brother
yeah.
and picking him off was so funny. The Lions-Falcons score being 28-3. The Lions using David Montgomery excessively in their game against the Bears where he had five touchdowns. And they're like, where did he come from? And I'm like, you know, this is just... That one made me laugh out loud more than any other one. Pat, the Titans one that you had on there, I want to address the Titans really quick just because they're
technically
mean.
It's not it.
It's not technically the one. Like, I made the tier list of all the schedule release videos, and the Titans were like a B or a C or whatever it was. And it's because the one they posted on social media was completely different from the one that they had featured on NFL Network and then posted to social media after the fact. And that one was so funny. Why would that not just be the one they go with? They went with this weird Jeff bar Fisher theme.
And Keith Urban in a bar? Like,
yeah. And Sheamus, the WWE superstar. Like 10
years ago. And no one likes it was weird. Jeff I don't Fisher know. Either. Like, it's not like he's some like Tennessee legend. I mean, I guess Keith Urban's a Nashville legend, but like... But the Titan, I put the Titans at my favorite because I just had to talk about, you know, again, it's kind of, I guess it's kind of lame to like shame people for not knowing football because like not everyone knows football. You could show me like, I don't even know, like name this like a clothing brand logo and I'm going to have no goddamn clue what I'm talking about. But it's still just some of these answers were just gold and just the music every time killed me. The one that killed me the most was when it was like the group of girls. They're like, oh, Cowboys, Cowboys, Cowboys. And then it was the Colts. I just died. Like, that was the hardest I laughed at any of the videos in that one specific moment. And just how some of these other teams picked up on it, like the Falcons changing their names to the Red Stallions.
Yeah.
The Colts changed their names to not the Cowboys. Like, it was because like there were a few where like when someone was like, oh, Lightning McQueen, it's like, oh, that's going to be the Chargers and the Texas Texans or something. Like, it was, I just don't get why that wasn't there. Because like that was by far out of all the things posted on that day, I think that was the best one. But it's like, why was that not it?
Especially with it being such a social media style video. Like, I've seen people do those videos where it's like, oh, my girlfriend guesses what these NFL teams are, and they're hilariously wrong, and they put them alongside the logos. And that's the style that it was. It was just so well executed. But yeah, I don't know why they didn't just include that. I guess because they're not really taking people like me into account that's trying to make a fucking tier list out of it. And they're like, we don't care. As long as we're making the video and it goes somewhere, it's fine. But I'm like, you know, you're trying to fight these other social media teams. They're all putting out bangers. Like, put your best foot forward, you know? So yeah, I see you have the Chargers and the Falcons in your list as well. And then I did like the Bears.
I liked the Bears, and I also put the Bills because a lot of player involvement. And those players seemed like they were having a good time. Like, it didn't seem like they were being held against their will. Like, the Bears, there are a bunch of them. They're cooking. My favorite part was how they kept calling the chef chief. That was my favorite gag of the whole thing. And then you're like yelling at people for ordering ketchup on hot dogs. Like, yeah, I do that. Mm-hmm. Like, I get it's wrong. Don't care. Sorry. And then the Bills one, it's just like, Josh Allen, the mailman, and then the offensive line getting the news guy to say a D's nuts joke, and just a bunch of stupid stuff. But I just enjoyed it because it looked like they were having fun. Now, those were, and I went Falcons over Rams just because I thought it was funnier. Like, it was basically the same thing, and I just thought the Falcons was funnier, especially the last one, the Falcon around, find out like that. That was perfect. And then also the Falcons win by changing their name to the Red Stallions. And the Charger one was just, it was the most well done one as well. Like, the work that must have gone into that. Again, just a kudos to all of these people working on these videos. The joke is always like, they even joked about it in the Lions when like the social media intern. I can assure you, these are not interns doing this.
Oh,
like,
no.
It's not like 20 years ago where they just have someone going beep, boop, boop. And like, these are highly skilled. It takes a highly skilled person to work in social media in this day and age, and the work that must have gone into that and all of these in general. So just to tip my metaphorical hat to just all, like, great, great work. And my favorite joke that I noticed the first time was they had something where it was like Dak against the Cowboys PR team, because like how last year like they just inadvertently shit on Dak after a game.
Yeah,
that was one of the Easter eggs that I somehow caught the first time. And that was one that got me pretty good. So, yeah, technically, I guess that's my favorite then, if we're not going to count the Titans. But the Titans just, I think the Titans knew what they were doing. And they just knew that, like, this was going to take off. And I loved it.
I just think some of the references they bring up are just things that I've completely forgotten about, too. Like, where the Chargers are facing the Jets, and it's just, like, in Times Square. It's got all these references to like the Sam Darnold mononucleosis like meme where it's like he's out with mononucleosis, and I'm just like, that is such an old thing now. Like, Darnold's been off the Jets for 2 or 3 years. It's like, God, you guys are really digging in.
I just love the graphic, you know, he's just like, it's like mono.
Yeah, it's so much fun. It's such a good way to kick off, like, I can't say kick off the season because this is almost the most downtime period that we have before the NFL season starts. But like to kick off, you know, us actually knowing when games are, it's nice. And you can kind of look into
this. This is what really gets people to start licking their chops. Like, oh, like, not only is it just like, oh, I'm ready for football season, but not like, you know who your team's playing week one, you know all this stuff. Like, it's a brilliant job by these teams, not only to get engagement, but to fire fans up, get fans ready, get fans invested.
It builds up the hype for sure. Also, quick shout out to the Arizona Cardinals for having literally the worst schedule release ever seen in my fucking life. Last year, I remember, you know, I did the tier list thing last year, and there were a few that I could just tell were lower effort. Even this year, like, I thought the Ravens one was kind of lower effort. It was basically a hype video with Lamar narrating, but whatever, it was fine. The Cardinals one was just Kyler having a catch with I don't even remember who, and he accidentally hits the guy recording, and then he's like, oh, you good, bro? And then it just, like, fades into the sketch. Guys, I understand your team is going to be awful this year, and you're heading for just a terrible season, but at least pretend you're excited. Like, god damn, that was awful. That was so bad.
I think it's fitting. It is fitting. That's how excited fans are going to be.
Just a garbage schedule release for a garbage team. But let's get into the actual games of week one. There are a few I wanted to go over, just the ones that stuck out to me. Obviously, number one being the game that's going to kick off our season for the NFL, Lions at Chiefs on Thursday Night Football. Now, this caught a lot of people by surprise because, you know, the NFL has done this thing the last few years where they want to give the defending Super Bowl champs a home game to open the year. They did it for the Rams. They did it for the Bucks. They're doing it for the Chiefs as well. I think people were a little surprised that this was the opponent, though, because there's other formidable opponents for the Chiefs that they were slated to play at home already on their schedule. You got the Lions, which is basically just the NFL saying, we are buying into the hype of the Lions. Everybody's projecting the Lions to potentially win their division, win a playoff game even. It's kind of the season of the Lions, and the NFL is like, all right, we're putting that to the test right off the bat. What was your reaction when you first saw this game announced in the wee hours of the morning that the schedule got released?
Oh, yeah. It was like, my first thought was just like, cool. Like, you know, a lot of times they'll go with a rematch or as close to a rematch. And especially the fact that, like, you know, the Chiefs are obviously going to host the Chargers at some point. Like, that could have been a good one. And it is scary, though, because who was the team that the NFL really got invested in last year with all these primetime games?
The Denver Broncos.
Exactly. I don't think that's going to be the case again, but it's just worth noting. But yeah, this is definitely the league saying that, like, this is one of our younger, more fun teams, and we're going to see what they can do against the defending champs. Like, that, my first time was just like, cool. Like, yeah, like, let's go. Like,
I'm actually looking up how many primetime games the Lions have just for
it was at least here. Three, I believe.
It probably, I'm sure. Let's see, week one, week two. Okay, so these are all times. These aren't going to tell me. Oh no, here we go. So there's a Thursday. They got a Thursday nighter, another Thursday nighter, week four against the Packers. Let's see, Sunday, right, 1 p.m., 1 p.m., 1 p.m. Monday nighter, week eight against the Raiders. So that's three.
Yep.
Sunday.
Big game.
Thanksgiving game against the Packers.
Of course.
And then 1 p.m., 1 p.m. TBD time against the Broncos. Great. 1 p.m. And then we get to these Saturday night games at the end of the season. So they have a Saturday night game against the Cowboys. So I guess that's technically primetime time. They're not overdoing it, at least, like they did with the Broncos. I think the Broncos had, what, like six or seven? And it was like, get this team off.
And they were against bad opponents, too. Like, there were some games where – what was it? The Colts?
I was at that game. Colts.
That was a Thursday night game. I just remember being absolutely abysmal, like one of the worst football games I've ever seen in my life, and I didn't even watch that much of it.
It was so bad. It was one of those games that, at least in person, it did get a little interesting at the end because it was close, but it was 9-9, so I still wanted to kind of off
close myself. Does not equal good.
No, it doesn't. It was just you when you're at a game and you know that it can end in one play, you get a little excited. But when you've been watching is incompetence up and down the field. I also, Pat, I think that was like the week after I traded you for Cortland Sutton in our fantasy league. I think this was like the first week I had him. So I went to go see him in person and absolute flop. And he had so many chances too. Not even all on Russell Wilson. The guy just did not have the hands that week.
I think he like led the league in like most uncatchable passes last year.
I'm
like,
sure he did.
He was up there. Like I know we both loved Cortland Sutton last year going into it. I think I took him in the third round.
I was very excited about Cortland. I expected to have him on my team because of how much I liked him, but thank God I didn't, because if I had Pitts and Cortland Sutton and Gabe Davis and Javonte Williams, who tore his ACL, I may not be here right now, to be
that's the thing. He was a really trendy like YouTube, TikTok video kind of guy. Cortland Sutton was one of the bigger breakthrough guys, and it didn't happen. I mean, maybe not. But I mean, he's still I wouldn't even call it a breakout, because he's a very solid, established guy. So, like, right. Why are we talking about – how did this get into a Cortland Sutton discussion?
Broncos, podcast. Primetime, Lions, you know, all this. We love it. We just kind of go with the flow here. But, yes, back to Lions-Chiefs. I think my early feelings on it are the Lions are going to come out ready to play. I think a team coached by Dan Campbell with all the talent that they have, this is going to be a close game. Do not forget, and I know this wasn't prime time, but last season, the Lions opened up their schedule with a week one game against the Philadelphia Eagles, which they lost 38-35. So they were up to the task last year. I think they'll be up to the task this year facing, you know, a top tier team. Going into Arrowhead, of course, is potentially a different beast, but if anybody's out here expecting a blowout in favor of the Chiefs that's going to start the season out on a dud, no, I do not believe that's what's going to happen. I think, if anything, we could be on somewhat of an upset watch. Of course, if I gun to my head, I am picking the Kansas City Chiefs, defending Super Bowl champions at home, to win this game. But the Lions are going to put up a good fight, and I think this is a very exciting way to open the year. Amon-Ra St. Brown masterclass incoming week one. Just bet on it. Some of the other games that I wanted to mention – Bengals at the Browns week one. This stood out to me just because the Browns are heading into a sort of do or die season, seeing what they can do with Deshaun Watson in his second year in Cleveland. And what better way to test them than the Cincinnati Bengals? They get to be at home, so they at least have that benefit to them, the Browns do. But it's a huge test for Cleveland, and to see if they can make this Deshaun trade worth it. Pat, Titans Saints, I wrote down it's just a mid-off. This could not, for this to be a non-divisional, non-conference game week one, and you just have Ryan Tannehill versus Derek Carr. Oh my God, it's disgusting.
That'll certainly be one of the games, if you're watching Red Zone, that I don't think you're going to see a whole lot of that game. That's just going to be a game that goes by, and at the end of the day, you'll be like, oh, look, so-and-so won today. Like, one of those games.
Unless Rashid Shaheed houses a kick or something, you're not seeing no highlights from that game. I can promise you.
I despise Rashid Shaheed.
What's your problem with Rashid Shaheed?
As an Alvin Kamara, I had a lot of Alvin Kamara last year, and I would just see this guy that I have just never heard of in my life just scoring 70-yard touchdown after 70-yard touchdown. It was just infuriating. But like, he's low-key electric. Like,
yeah, he's really good. He's like a good
like
player.
That was just like, I think it's just fun to have a personal vendetta against a guy as harmless and, you know, not relevant as Rashid Shaheed. So like,
Rashid Shaheed's probably like doing charity work right now or something. We're just like, that here fucking asshole scoring long touchdowns when I'd rather he not. What a dick. No, I totally understand it, though. Rashid Shaheed's emergence kind of lined up with the Saints season as a whole, where it's like, okay, they're not going to really be doing it. I mean, granted, they were in the hunt for the division all year because the NFC South was awful, but they looked so bad. And then it's like, okay, Rashid Shaheed's their breakout player of the season. Got it. That really tracks.
He wasn't even like breakout enough to like actually like be consistently relevant, but still like,
It wasn't like, oh, go pick up Rashid Shaheed in your fantasy leagues. It was, oh, you're watching a game and one of these drives is going to end in a one play bomb to Rashid Shaheed. And you just don't know when. Packers at Bears week one. We've got Jordan Love versus Justin Fields for the first time. I'm excited for that, just to kind of kick off the new era in that division. Cardinals at Commanders, I highlighted because talk about games you're not gonna see on Red Zone week one. That game might as well not even kick off. Like, they
Sam
can play
Howell
that one
versus ?
Oh God, and ? May outperform Sam Howell and nobody would be surprised. I this game is gonna be bad, like bad.
Not to go too far off on a tangent here, but like, do we think Jeff Driskel's going to have tight end eligibility again this year in Yahoo leagues? Because like, he genuinely might be a week one starting quarterback. Like, they cannot do that. I don't care how bad he is and how bad his team is. You cannot have a starting quarterback being at another position like that. You cannot do it.
I didn't even remember Jeff Driskel converting to tight end. I remember when I remember him as a quarterback. He's a guy whose name pops up every once in a while. And then I saw that people are outraged because Yahoo leagues have him as a tight end. Like, when did he actually convert to tight end? Because
he really didn't. Like, he did, and then he came back, but he was still playing quarterback mostly last year.
Yeah,
exactly. And he was running the ball. So just a quick aside there, because I was trying to think, like, who's going to be their week one starter? And it very well could be Jeff Driskel. Maybe we'll pick him in our tight end draft.
Oh, no, that's right. The random tight end draft, Jeff fucking Driskel. Yeah, him right next to Tim Tebow we can pick.
Tebow is on my list.
Me too, sadly. All right, also week one, Cowboys at Giants Sunday Night Football. A pretty standard Sunday Night Football game that should be good. I don't think it'll be anything groundbreaking. It's a division game. Two teams in the NFC East who are both pretty solid. I don't mind that game. It's nothing crazy exciting. It doesn't get me hyped up like a Lions-Chiefs matchup would, to be honest, but it's fine. I don't mind watching it isolated on Sunday night. And then Monday Night Football, we got the Bills at the Jets. This is a banger of a Monday Night Football game, I will say, because this is also are the Jets who we thought they were type of thing? Are they who we think they can be type of
game? Good test and for Rodgers. What better way to test them? I like it.
Yeah, you've got Rodgers at home in good old New Jersey going up against the Buffalo Bills, who have kind of run train on this division for the last, 3-4 years. So it's a really good test for him, and I think that's going to be a super fun game. Rodgers, no stranger to primetime. I think the Jets are probably the team with a lot of primetime games that it's like if they go off the rails, the NFL is going to be facing the same sort of complaints they faced with the Denver Broncos. I've already drawn so many comparisons to the Broncos. Just, the acquisition of Rodgers and where the team stood at the time, it feels like the Broncos. But also, I have a lot more faith in Aaron Rodgers not being ass than I did Russell Wilson. Or at least, I guess I thought Russell Wilson would be good last year and he wasn't. But Rodgers, I have no reason to believe. There is a connection, that's true. Nathaniel Hackett could just be the guy that blows up teams.
I know for a fact the Jets do play on Sunday night against Vegas, November 12th, because there is a decent chance I'm at that game. So that's the one you've earmarked.
Reporting live from Jets Raiders, we've got Sidewarmer Pat on the scene.
So I know for a fact that they've got a Sunday night game.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, hopefully they don't have too many primetime games. If we run into the same issue we did last year, I will not be watching the primetime games, which is insane to say because right now I'm begging for football, but we get to that point where it's just like this is barely even football. Pat, Tom Brady is finally a New England Patriot again. I want to say first off, the schedule release video the Patriots had warmed my heart because it was basically Devin McCourty going to the house of retired Patriots. And at the very end, Brady shows up to the door and is like, got room for one more. I was like, oh, it's definitely finally happening. It's finally happening. We're out of this he's a Buccaneer era and we're going to settle into the Tom Brady is a retired Patriot because he won 6 Super Bowls there and played for 17 years there. It's so nice to see. And now the Patriots week one against the Eagles are going to be honoring Tom Brady on the field. We actually knew that before the schedule release video came out, so it's kind of nice little tie in there. The Patriots facing the Eagles, a little bit rude, in my opinion. Yikes. But to be honoring. Also, Pat, this just hit me. Matt Patricia revenge game?
Oh, hell shit. Yeah.
Shit. So, that I think just
the Eagles
hit
are going to win that game, too. So I know. I'm going to run that narrative into the goddamn ground.
Yeah, they're just going to pick up Matt Patricia on their shoulders at the end of the game if they can find him in whatever remote office they throw him in for that game. Maybe it'll just be his old office.
You know, as a non-Patriots fan getting in New England, getting terrorized by them for 2 decades, it's good to see them because, first of all, it just goes to show that their separation was a bit over-exaggerated. Everyone knew that him and Bob Kraft were, still good, but his dissent with Belichick and things like that, it just goes to show that was just overly hyped by fans and the media. And it's good to see them acknowledge 2 decades of just, I don't even think excellence begins to describe what they did there. So obviously well-deserved, and I'm glad that it was overblown. I'm glad that Patriots fans and football fans alike get to see that.
It's nice to see. It definitely patches up the little hole in my heart that there was by Brady leaving because it was just a scene I never thought would happen. So it's going to be really nice to have him kind of reintegrated into the New England community, the Patriots fan base. Again, it's going to be nice to see him around more often. But Pat, the question becomes, how often will we see him around? Because apparently, while all this is happening, Tom Brady may also be becoming a minority owner of the Las Vegas Raiders. As Raider faithful, I saw you tweet already, hey, come out of retirement.
I was like, hey, yo, come out of retirement?
But otherwise, how do you feel about this? I mean, look, it's ownership. At the end of the day, it's not really going to change much from a fan perspective. But having Tom Brady, this news breaking, how did you feel about it when you first saw it?
It makes so much sense because that's where he wanted to go a few years ago. And it was jackass John Gruden saying no, like, no, we don't need him. It's like, and that's somehow not even in like the top 10 worst things he did as head coach of the Raiders.
That's why, because the Raiders were heavily rumored as the team that when Brady was like, some team said, you know, no, and he's like, oh, you're sticking with that guy? Like, it was heavily believed to be the Raiders and Derek Carr.
And Gronk was also rumored to, like, Gronk would have gone with him. Dana White had, you know, kind of told a story about that where it seemed a little inconsistent. But, and then I said this on my first podcast, that after the season, when it was clear Carr would not be staying in Las Vegas and that Brady would not be staying in Tampa, that, like, I want Tom Brady. And I still think that if Tom Brady were to be playing in the NFL this year, it would have been in Las Vegas. So it does make sense, you know, the kind of the aura of the city, very flashy, very Tom Brady kind of thing. You know, again, it's very inconsequential. It's just like Magic Johnson owning the Dodgers, or things like that. Very symbolic almost, but hell yeah. Like, yeah, and then he can come out of retirement.
Right. I think it's funny that poor Jimmy G cannot escape this man.
Oh, my
Jimmy G, it just, he gets booted out of New England first. And I mean, look, Brady's involvement in that as well, I believe, was overblown. But it's still funny that they drafted Jimmy G as a potential successor. And Brady's just like, I'm too good. I'm not going anywhere. And they're like, all right, I guess we got to get rid of Jimmy. Jimmy goes over, you know, has a decent time with the Niners. And then Brady's like, I'm going to follow you to the NFC. Granted, they never really crossed paths in a meaningful way. They never had a playoff game against each other or anything like that. But just funny that they keep having these connections. And now Brady's going to own Jimmy.
There was a good amount of talk of Brady going to San Francisco as well when he left.
That's right.
That was another very highly, obviously same with Rodgers, but that was always kind of this like fantasy situation for either of those guys. So he really has been in Jimmy's shadow.
That's right. And of course, there was the Vegas connection already when we didn't know Brady was retiring, where Vegas was interested in both Jimmy and Brady. And it's like, oh my God, this poor guy cannot escape Tom. But look, Jimmy's at the end of the day kind of just a very average quarterback. So Brady's just keeping him relevant, I guess. Brady's just always following him around like, hey,
have you Jimmy's seen over how here. That guy looks? He will be relevant. That guy Jimmy, is a stud.
Jimmy looks like he should be a waiter on the Vegas Strip at some fancy restaurant. Like,
and
that's
honestly,
what he looks like.
There's a decent chance that happens within the next couple of years.
Week 8, Jimmy Garoppolo gets cut and is just immediately a male stripper on the Vegas Strip. I would not be surprised in the slightest. But yeah, look, Brady, I guess, wants to get into the ownership side of things. It's been rumored with the Dolphins in the past, but it looks like it may happen with the Raiders. How this affects his potential Fox involvement has been, you know, there's been some back and forth on what that could mean for that, but I don't think he said he doesn't want to jeopardize it. So
even if he is, Fox will make, I saw Richard Deitch from The Athletic, who's like the sports media guru, basically said that Fox does not care. Like, as long as he wants to be still be on their air, he will be on their air regardless of what his role is. They will make that work.
And I mean, at the end of the day, who cares? It's not like owning a partial stake in a team, as far as if they're worried about him being like biased or anything like that, is no different than a network hiring Tony Romo, who's going to be a Cowboy at heart forever.
Same
like,
just with Troy Aikman.
Yeah, just because they don't own stake in these teams doesn't mean they're any less likely to be biased. Like, Brady's not going to suddenly just talk up the Raiders constantly. So, no, I don't think it would affect anything either.
I don't think there's much there.
No, me neither. And all right, Pat, as we look forward to next season, the one kind of, I guess, big piece of breaking news player-wise that's come out in the last week or so, and it's not even breaking, it's just been kind of pushing toward this. Dalvin Cook does not appear that he is set to be a Minnesota Viking next season. He is going to be released after June 1st, which will save the Vikings $9 million in cap space. They've tried to pursue a trade. They could not find a partner. The Dolphins were kind of the most rumored team, but it seems like maybe their drafting of Devon Achane has maybe taken this off the table. Look, it could change that with him with the free agent status, but it at least made them not interested in making a trade for him. I'm curious, Pat, where you think Dalvin Cook could end up. I have a few speculative teams I put in here, but it's just there's no obvious fit right now.
Exactly. And I think it's so difficult to tell just because, like, we also haven't had a situation like this. Like, I'd say probably the most similar one was a few years ago when the Jags cut Leonard Fournette right before the season. And but even then, Fournette was a guy who was, like, a little washed. You know, maybe it's like, hey, this guy is just not very good anymore. And obviously, Dalvin Cook's peak days are probably behind him. But, I mean, this is a guy that still almost ran for 1,200 yards last year. Like, there's been durability questions, but he didn't miss any games last year, despite a shoulder injury. You know, this is a guy that can still clearly play. He's a solid pass catcher. But I think the biggest issue here is that why would a bad team bring Dalvin Cook in? Like, another thing thought is, like, the Fournette situation made me think of the Bucks, or do you think of the Cardinals? Why would they bring in a Dalvin Cook? Mm-hmm. Like, you'd think you'd be wanting to move forward with him, but then all these competitive teams, they either don't really fit, or it's a team like the Dolphins who just seem, they're like, we'll talk a lot more about the Dolphins soon, but it's like, no thanks. I just don't see a natural fit. Like, he's going to go somewhere, obviously, but it's going to mess something up. And obviously, because when you bring in Dalvin Cook, you don't bring in Dalvin Cook as a complimentary guy. We talked about Ezekiel Elliott, Leonard Fournette, like Kareem Hunt. Those guys are going to be brought in as a complimentary guy and number two. Dalvin Cook is not a number two. You do not bring in Dalvin Cook to be a backup. So he is going to mess up a fantasy situation. And obviously, chugga-chugga, all aboard the Alexander Mattison trade train if this does happen.
Yeah, Alexander Mattison has just routinely been the guy that whenever Dalvin Cook goes down, it's like, okay, this guy's a top 10 running back right away. I do worry slightly about what Alexander Mattison will do over the course of a full season when it's obvious that he's the entrenched starter. I, for fantasy purposes at least, won't view him as more than an RB2 most likely, but he's still got the upside for more. But yeah, Dalvin Cook himself, I have a couple teams here that I wrote down. I think the first most obvious one for me is the Buffalo Bills. It's a little complicated with the fact that they brought in Damian Harris, who is that plotting, you know, potential goal line type of back, but he's just not as good as Dalvin Cook, I don't think. And then you've got Dalvin Cook's brother. Dalvin Cook's brother is the main connection here. James Cook is on this team. So if Dalvin has his choice and if the Bills are interested, I think that would make a lot of sense to bring him in here. It's kind of the one contending team that maybe has room to find a superstar running back. Granted, how many more superstar years does he have? He's 28 years old. He will be 28 by the start of the season. It's a valid question, but that's just a team that you look at the depth chart and you see a potential spot. So I look at them, and then I look at the LA Rams. They've got Cam Akers. We expected them to add a running back in the draft. They added Zach Evans, who's not a very, you know, highly drafted running back, so not much of an investment there. I think this is a spot where he could go because the Rams are a team, Pat, that I almost feel like will be a little more competitive than people think. Because
I agree.
People are writing this team off because of Matthew Stafford's injury and Cooper Kupp's injury. Stafford is a guy who has historically not been injured, and I don't necessarily – like, look, if he gets the all clear to start the season, I don't have – super great reason to believe the back thing is going to pop up again. And Cooper Kupp, I feel like, is going to recover as well. So that this team looking for another weapon would not surprise me in the slightest to at least compliment Cam Akers' start and probably split fairly evenly with him.
Yeah, I don't necessarily expect the Rams to, like, be a playoff team, but they're a team that I expect at the end of the year to be in the conversation. Like, obviously, they're not going to be better than San Francisco. They're probably not going to be better than Seattle. But I could see that. I just think that people are worried. You know, that's a pretty significant injury for Stafford, and he's old. And, you know, clearly he's had no durability issues throughout his career besides last year, but he's just old. You know, like, who knows what we could be seeing coming back, but they are probably the biggest wild card in the whole league. And another team that I had down as well is the Bears. Similar situation to, like, a Bucs or a Cardinals. You know, the Bears have Khalil Herbert, Deontay Foreman. They drafted Roschon Johnson. He has a clear path to a heavy RB1 role there. Yeah. And it just the question is, they're like, how competitive do they think they're going to be, and how competitive are they actually going to be? Like, I could see it as a situation where that's another team where, like, they'll probably be a little better than people think, despite having the worst record last year. And again, it's just a matter of, like, is it worth it for them? Like, are they trying to not be very good this year? Or do they say, hey, we want to win as many games as possible this year? And if they do, I think he'd be a great fit. I just don't know if something like that would happen. I have, like, gun to my head, where do I think he's going? Miami?
I would Buffalo? Pick the Bills right now, but it's
I put them as number two.
Yeah, I think the AFC East is a very possible home for Dalvin Cook, which brings me to another team. Pat, the Patriots, I don't think, are an outlandish fit for Dalvin Cook. It's not the best fit, but when you look at Bill Belichick and how he's managed running backs through the course of his tenure, he's never really fully relied on one guy. And if you look at the backfield right now, that's kind of what it's set to do. Ramondre Stevenson's really the only guy there. I will warn fantasy players against, you know, the idea that he's going to get literally all of the touches, because Ty Montgomery was productive last year and they were using him a lot in the games before he got hurt. Ty Montgomery's still there, so he will be involved if they don't bring in anybody else, but I would not be that surprised. Belichick bringing in a veteran who has a few years left and is on, probably on a discount, would not surprise me at all. And having it be a backfield of, you know, two really solid running backs, I think that gives the Patriots sort of an extra little bump that they need in the AFC East. I talked last week about how defense is going to be their calling card to, you know, making some noise in this division and trying to sneak into a playoff spot. I think offensively, they probably need some extra firepower just to, you know, really make that push. And Dalvin Cook could be that guy. I'm still surprised that this is what the Patriots backfield looks like right now, because it's just not a Belichick backfield.
Yeah, you make a fair point, and I can, but again, I can more so see them going and getting a guy like a Fournette or a Hunt or a Zeke. Just like, I don't think they'd bring in a guy as good as Cook, because like Ramondre Stevenson is pretty damn good. But it's true. Like, I can't even remember the last time that Corey Dillon, that the Patriots like had a true bell cow running back. And then who even like those, what was it? Pierre Strong at the end of the year even had like that 2-touchdown game. And I'm forgetting the other young player, Kevin Harris.
Yeah.
Kevin Harris. Like, there was a point at the end of the year last year when those two were hurt where you're reading waiver wire columns and Kevin Harris and Pierre Strong is there. So there will be a complimentary running back, but I just, again, I don't see Dalvin Cook as a complimentary guy. And I also don't see Ramondre Stevenson as a complimentary guy.
No, I mean, look, viewing Dalvin Cook as a complimentary guy is definitely weird. But you look at, you know, Fournette and Zeke and how they're heading that direction, it happens quickly. And maybe it's happening now. Maybe it won't be a slow fade into being a complimentary guy. Maybe it'll be kind of a jump. And it won't be like he's going to be a clear backup and get 6 or 7 touches. I could see him just going to a place where he's, you know, getting 11 or 12 and another guy's also getting 11 or 12. It's going to be interesting to see what is in Dalvin Cook's future, because it's just obviously the demand is not there in terms of trade. So how will the demand be once he is a free agent come June 1st? It's going to be an interesting storyline to follow here. And Green, Pat, and speaking, what's up?
Go ahead. I was going to say, I think this is a great segue into talking about specifically the Miami Dolphins and their backfield. Absolutely. in our preview. Just because you look at what they've compiled, they've got 31-year-old Raheem Mostert, who might be the least healthy running back in all of fantasy football the last handful of years. And Jeff Wilson, who we've seen a lot of good stuff out of Jeff Wilson, but again, 28 years old, never really had a huge workload like that. And then Devon Achane, who, like I said a few weeks ago when we did our rookie draft, that he was a guy that I kind of liked just because I don't trust these two. But Mike McDaniel is clearly a guy who doesn't care. Like, he's going to make it work with one of those two. Like, Dalvin Cook is a clear upgrade, especially on a small salary after he gets released. But I can see him being content. Like, what I had their ADPs down, like, neither of these guys are, I mean, they're obviously fantasy relevant because they're co-starters. Where did I have that? Yeah, I've got here Mostert is currently RB47 and Wilson is RB54. So, like, hardly fantasy relevant. And from a fantasy standpoint, that backfield is going to be gross because you just never know who's going to come out of it. And just from a real-life football standpoint, even a 28-year-old Dalvin Cook is a far better option than those two. And I just wonder, like, if real-life football is going to win in the end there. Could you, like, imagining Cook with a healthy Tua and then Hill and Waddle? Like, that's fantastic.
It's an electric combination for sure. Obviously, talking about the Dolphins here, this is the first part of our sort of division-by-division fantasy preview, this being the AFC East. So Dolphins backfield is what we're kicking it off with. And yeah, I was surprised, Pat, looking up their ADPs as well when I saw that Devon Achane was the top Dolphins running back in terms of ADPs being drafted as RB35. A lot of people just kind of assuming that he's going to be the best running back in that backfield fantasy-wise, which I don't think is a safe bet at all.
No,
I understand. Him being
he's
the guy
more of like
you want to take a stab
kind of guy.
At. Yeah, and of course that is what most of the drafts are right now. So people aren't necessarily, you know, going after Mostert or Wilson in best ball, which I understand, but still interesting enough that he's, you know, 10, 12 spots higher than the next closest Dolphins running back. Yeah. So A-Chain, you know, Dolphins fans and fantasy players hoping for the best with him, but ultimately this backfield's going to be very unpredictable, I think, and adding Dalvin Cook to it would not surprise me in the least. Pat, we'll go to kind of the quarterback situation here with the Dolphins as well. Tua, to me, is maybe the biggest quarterback value I've seen.
QB12. Couldn't believe that.
QB12 is wild. Very back end of QB1 territory in a 12-team league. And this is a guy that when he was healthy was really, really good. The receivers top, that top he has to guy. Work with. Yeah, he's incredibly good. And so he's the guy that's such a good value. Like how we talked about last week, pairing Anthony Richardson with somebody. Tua could be the perfect guy to do that. And you roll Tua out there week one, you feel good about it, and see if Anthony Richardson ends up being a better, higher ceiling guy. If not, you're probably still happy with Tua. So Tua at QB12 seems like a crazy guy.
Even Tua, you know, we talk about how, like, if you're the last guy in your league taking a quarterback, you're probably going to want to take two. If I'm the last guy who's taking a starter and I'm taking Tua, I'm good. I'm not taking another guy.
That's fair.
Like, obviously, you're banking on the health, but from a sheer performance standpoint, as long as he stays healthy, I would be completely fine with rolling him as my QB1 all season. Yeah. Like, I just, we don't know. I mean, I really hope that his brains stay together this year and they can figure that out, but I'm just shocked that's a guy who... It was, you know, like probably a top six guy at his peak last year. Probably the first guy outside of the big group.
Yeah, you can call it maybe a combination of recency bias and injury concerns, because I feel like everybody's just kind of wrote him off as just Tua is going to be in the hospital for half the season. Look, if that doesn't happen, he's going to be one of the best values. I don't know if you guys can hear this ambulance that's coming in behind me, but
I can't. So for what it's worth, bro.
That's great, because it just happens all the time. Fire trucks, ambulances, it's what happens when you're in Denver. People just light stuff on fire. But nonetheless, what's really going to be on fire is the Dolphins receiving corps, Pat. That's what helps Tua be this good. So Tyreek Hill, wide receiver 3 right now, Waddle, wide receiver 11. All these ADPs that we're referencing are from Underdog, which is the place that these best ball drafts are happening, and it's just the most reliable way to go off ADP right now. They'll change in the next few months, obviously, but these guys probably won't change that much. This will be right around where they're at. Hill and Waddle, to me, are just two of the safest fantasy players you can find because of how consolidated the targets are in Miami. Mm-hmm. You've got Hill, Waddle, Cedric Wilson is their wide receiver 3. Nobody's worried about him, and they do not have a tight end to speak of. So,
yeah, if you look at, I forget which site there is, it's like some fantasy depth chart site. They don't even have one listed. It's Durham Smythe. But like, that's how irrelevant Durham Smythe is fantasy wise that some sites do not even list them as having a tight end.
Yeah.
I like Hill better, obviously, because you get the big play value, and knock on wood, he's got a history, no injury history, really. This is a guy who has not missed a ton of games, as opposed to Waddle. It's almost like once a week where he makes a catch and he gets up funny and you get scared.
Yeah. Hill doesn't get hit. Waddle gets hit a lot.
Yeah. It seems really like, hasn't missed a lot of time there. Obviously, you like Waddle a little, well, not better, but in a PPR format, which, hello, everyone. Everyone should be playing PPR. If any of my league mates are listening, every fantasy league should be PPR. I hate to have to distinguish it, but the fact that Brandon, my main league, is a standard league. So I do prefer Waddle in a PPR setting, but either way, the fact that there are two wide receiver ones coming out of the same offense, like everyone talks about, oh, Jamar Chase and T. Higgins, fantastic. Those are not going to be two fantasy wide receiver ones.
But
these are two guys that you do not have to worry about others taking their stuff. And the fact that they don't have a crazy running game either. They're going to sling that ball, and those two are both guys that I would be thrilled to have on my team.
Yeah, as a guy who we've talked about before, I went way too upside heavy in fantasy last year. These are two players who I would love to find on my fantasy roster come draft day, because they just feel like the safest guys. When you find the guys that you know most of the offense is going to be through them, at least through the air. Like, most of the targets are going to these two guys, and there's nobody else you have to worry about. There's not really even any breakout candidates on this roster. I mean, I'm sure somebody will pop up and prove me wrong for a week or two, but like, overall, these are the guys in this offense that you're focused on. Pat, Tyler Croft being the other tight end, I believe the Dolphins just brought them in.
No, that was very recent. Yeah,
he's had weeks where he's been okay, but yeah, again, nothing to worry about there really with the tight end spot. I think we can move on to the Buffalo Bills, Pat, are generally have been the darling of the AFC East, but fantasy-wise, not a ton of reliable options here. You've got Josh Allen, QB2 overall, which is exactly where I expected to find him. You get Josh Allen in fantasy, you're going to be very happy. And then you've got Stephon Diggs, wide receiver 5 on Underdog right now. Also a good spot for him. Diggs, also an incredibly safe wide receiver. He's paired with an elite quarterback. He is the only wide receiver of note on this team. And absolutely. Beyond that, everybody else, it's a dart throw. And that's why I feel like if you're in multiple leagues, just draft like one different bill in each of those leagues. And one of them's going to emerge and be something. I feel like for me, Kincaid and Shakir are probably the best bets right now. But you're looking at like even the run game. I'm probably staying away from this backfield in general. At PPR league, I guess James Cook could be tempting. I'm staying away from Damian Harris just because of Josh Allen's goal line sniping. I'm all set on him. And Gabe Davis, I'm out on, I mean, and then the tight end situation, we all know what that is with Knox and Kincaid.
Yeah, just very muddy all around. Like, Harris is, you said it earlier where you said that, like, Harris is a guy that's not as good, and I just said he's not good. Like, you know, he's a guy who, you know, probably benefited a lot from the system he was playing in New England, very run-heavy, very punching in at the goal line, and that's really all he can do. And it's also of note that everyone talks about James Cook as this huge PPR threat. Obviously, he's more of a PPR threat than Harris because Harris has zero passing down value, like almost zero. But Cook really didn't do a ton in the passing game last year. You know, like there's only a handful of games where he had 4 or 5 targets, let alone catches. And it's true, even like there was only 5 games last year where Cook had double-digit carries. And I think he had a 99-yard game, an 87-yard game. But even in those opportunities, he didn't necessarily completely pop off. And I just think it's the same thing with Eagles running backs. Whenever you get to the Eagles, it's just that, like, you have such a goal line threat at quarterback that at the end of the day, touchdowns are king. You know, your guy can have a lousy day, and if he scores a touchdown or two, that number looks good. And you know, obviously where they're going, they're going to be going almost past that running back dead zone. At that point, it's fair to throw a dart at them, but you cannot take either of those guys right now and expect them to be a lineup regular.
Yeah, I don't hate James Cook at RB30. I mean, I think that's another where it's like a viable dart throw. At RB38 is just, I mean, that's where he should be, and I'm just really not interested. Every player has a value at some level, but I just imagine that once Damian Harris starts being the guy, like, climbing toward the top of the best available in your draft, there's just going to be other guys I'm more interested in taking a shot on.
Exactly.
I think in this, with the Bills, I'm relying on Allen, I'm relying on Diggs, everybody else just good luck. I do like Dalton Kincaid, I'll say that much, because the more I think about it, the more I think that they drafted somebody to find that last weapon for Josh Allen, and maybe it's going to be him if they didn't bring in any notable receivers. So I like taking a shot on him. I do think it's interesting that Kincaid is tight end 11 and Knox is tight end 19. Again, you've already got people. It may be the best ball effect again, but just already you got these rookies jumping the guy that was the incumbent starter there.
And like I mentioned last week with tight ends too, unless you're playing in a tight end premium league, touchdowns are king, especially for tight ends. And that's like all Dawson Knox can really do.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but it just feels like Kincaid's touchdown upside is not as high as it could be. And that's why like I said, there are 3 or 4 guys ranked behind him that I would take as my tight end 1 over him.
Absolutely. And Pat, you want to talk about the Bills being a muddy fantasy situation? How about we talk about the New England Patriots? As far as reliable fantasy weapons,
I've got two guys written down.
You got two? I'm impressed, Pat, because I figured it would be Ramondre Stevenson, and that would be the end.
I do have Juju. I do. Okay, I do
we're giving Juju some respect.
As at least a guy who's going to be relevant.
That's nice. Okay, so I guess I'll start at quarterback here. So you've got Mac Jones. Pat, Mac Jones is QB 31.
Holy reference. I didn't even look.
Mac Jones on Underdog is QB 31. For reference, Tom Brady is QB 35. These are drafts
who's the starter that's behind him? Like
There's Baker Mayfield is behind him. Ryan Tannehill is behind him. So I don't know. That's a good point. How are there two starters behind him? Is there a backup above Mac Jones? Is
probably being picked ahead of him. Maybe like Gardner Minshew is being picked ahead of him, or like Minshew and Richardson.
I can't imagine it would be Minshew. All right, hold on. I got it right here. I'm scoping out for guys who aren't a starter, obviously.
Trying to think other teams where
Geno, Goff, Russ, Carr, Love, Stafford, Bryce. Oh, Trey Lance and Brock Purdy are both going above him.
So that makes sense. So that makes sense then.
But again, it's hilarious we have to talk about Mac Jones in this vein that it's like, oh yeah, we totally understand why two quarterbacks from the same team are going ahead of an obvious starter in Mac Jones. It's just where Mac Jones is at right now.
It's so bizarre just because like they're going to score points. And when you score points, fantasy points are produced, but it's like outside of Ramondre Stevenson, it's like, who the hell is going to score these points? And not to say who the hell is going to score these points. It's who is going to produce consistently. And outside of Stevenson, I don't think it's anybody, even Juju. Like a lot of the receivers that have worked best in these Belichick, Bill O'Brien systems are not these big alpha wide receivers. They're more of the slot guys. They're more of these gadget guys. Like who was the last like true outside receiver the Patriots have had? Randy Moss. So, or maybe they'll kind of change their way a little bit. Obviously, Bill O'Brien had DeAndre Hopkins. But again, Juju is a guy who is a little more show than production. You know, he's more of like a Juju as opposed to like, oh, Juju when you're looking at the stat line. Like, solid. He's the clear number one receiver there. But the fact that that doesn't mean a whole lot to me is just so indicative of it. Like, there's going to be Tyquan Thornton weeks. Is Devontae Parker still there? If he is, there's going to be Devontae Parker weeks. Like, And we had a question last week, too, about after the podcast about Mike Gesicki, and I don't want any of that because, again, it's such a touchdown-dependent thing, and that's all Hunter Henry does. Mike Gesicki is great in between the 20s, but, again, unless you're in a tight end premium league, what does that matter?
Yeah. Mac Jones is a guy that in two QB leagues I'm very interested in at his current ADP. I think Bill O'Brien coming in is going to turn the offense around to a level that I think he's going to outperform his ADP pretty comfortably, but he's not a guy that in a one QB league that I'm saying you should even really throw a dart at. He's a guy that like I would just keep an eye on. I do think he's going to improve this season, but he's a guy that you can just pick up at some point. Like there's no reason to have him occupy a spot on the bench hoping he becomes something better. So Mac Jones, people may remember his rookie year being actually, you know, pretty productive. 22 touchdowns, 13 interceptions, about 3,800 his passing yards. Pretty solid, right? QB 18 in fantasy. So that's kind of what you're chasing that. First of all, you're chasing him getting back to rookie level productivity and maybe exceeding that a little. And if he exceeds that a little, what does that get him to? QB 14, 13, a guy you're going to start on bye weeks and a guy who's super viable in two QB leagues, probably nothing beyond that.
I was about to say in a one QB league, his ceiling is bye week filling.
Yeah. But I think he will reach that. I mean, look, call it Patriots bye, sure. But I just – things bottomed out so badly last year, and there are reasonable enough weapons now. You brought in Juju. You brought in Mike Gesicki. Hopefully Tyquan Thornton takes a step forward. Hopefully they use Kendrick Bourne in a way I want them to use him. I think better days are ahead for Mac Jones this season specifically. QB 31 is quite frankly disrespectful, but I understand you kind of staying away from him. I do get that. Ramondre, look, certified RB1 the way things stand right now, unquestioned. I will reiterate Ty Montgomery is going to get work for sure, but Ramondre, if this backfield stays the way it is, should be no later than a second round pick. Juju's a guy, again, you said more show than go with him. It's just he'll have weeks. Parker, Thornton, then the tight end spots, Henry and Gesicki. I think if tight end ends up being as desolate as it was last year, I could see Hunter Henry having a bounce back year just because he's the guy that they look for in the red zone often. So if they're getting into those situations more under a Bill O'Brien offense, I could see Hunter Henry getting back to fantasy viability.
Yeah, again, he's another guy that, especially with the history of the tight end position, he'll be started in fantasy. I think he'll be started 100%. More than Gesicki, honestly. Especially, you know, injuries and bye weeks and all this stuff. But again, I don't see him as any more than that. And I wonder, obviously, this is the first of our 8-part series. Will there be a team with fewer guys written down as fantasy relevant than the Patriots? Off the top of my head, no. I mean, obviously, we need to take a close look. But off the top of my head, I can't think of a team that is going to have fewer people on my list as fantasy relevant than Patriots.
Yeah, because I mean, I think, you know, scrape the bottom of the barrel with a team like even the Texans, but I'm like, okay, you've got a rookie quarterback with the Texans who's probably going to rely on a guy like Dalton Schultz. Dalton Schultz, I think, will be fantasy viable, and then Damian Pierce is fantasy viable. I think the Patriots right now have like 1.5 guys. It's Ramondre and Juju, and that's really it right now. So Patriots very well may be the team with the least – you know, fantasy relevant players. But for a team that we were projecting to still be at least okay, that means guys are going to emerge. We just don't know who they're going to be. So
exactly. And another, if no one emerges consistently, like, you can be a good real life football team with little fantasy football value. And I love that it's Bill Belichick, because Bill Belichick is just the antithesis of fantasy football. It's perfect.
It's classic. I mean, Bill Belichick's the guy who's led, you know, granted they had Tom Brady, but a guy like Chris Hogan to fantasy relevance. And I feel like that's just kind of where we're headed. There's going to be some random guys that end up being decent for a few weeks at a time. All right. The New York, New Jersey, Green Bay Jets. We've got Aaron Rodgers at quarterback. Currently QB 15, pretty much surprising. What I expected. Was that surprising? So here's the thing.
I think a little low. Like, I at least figured he would be like a – but, I mean, I guess he is a low-end QB1, high-end QB2 right now. He's in that conversation.
Yeah, I mean, that's where he's kind of been trending with the Packers the last few years, is around, like, QB 15. I granted he had the MVP year not long ago, but this is kind of when he hasn't had that year where he's been trending toward. I think there's definitely room for him to outperform this, but, you know – When you're at the back end of the quarterback position like that, that's kind of what you're settling for, is Rodgers, and maybe hoping that he gets back to MVP level. I don't know that I think he's going to be super, super productive, but I don't mind drafting him at QB 15. There's room for the investment to pay off there.
Yeah, again, I think if you take a flyer on an Anthony Richardson or a Trey Lance, if he's healthy, Rodgers is a good guy to pair him with. And I was just thinking about the Jets. James Robinson is in the Patriots backfield. Not that he's going to be relevant.
He sure is, yeah.
We didn't mention him at all, but no, he's like, someone in the Twitch chat also just said, will James Robinson be relevant? No, he will not.
No,
but
no.
I think it's worth mentioning that we just listed the Patriots backfield, and he is there. That is a fact. But I think that's like I said, Rodgers is kind of a good fallback kind of guy. If you're going later and you want a guy with a solid floor, Aaron Rodgers will be a solid guy for you. But I'm just curious, because outside of Garrett Wilson, I don't know who is consistently going to produce. I like Wilson. I think he's a high-end two right now, I believe.
Wide receiver nine. Wide receiver
nine, wow.
Yeah, so he's a one.
And that's fitting. I think that he is going to be a surefire wide receiver one. He's going to be a stud. But outside of that, it's just like, you've got all these guys like Mecole Hardman, Corey Davis, the ghost of Randall Cobb. You know, these are guys that are going to get theirs. Like, they are going to be weak. Oh, Alan Lazard, Rodgers' buddy. Honestly, I would probably say Lazard is this. If I had to take two guys from that Jets passing game, we're not talking Breece Hall, I would go Lazard as my second choice, just because of the rapport they have and his red zone viability.
I think I would as well. Garrett Wilson, Pat, is a guy that I definitely think will – or can become an alpha receiver, but he's a guy that if your prerogative in fantasy is to go with truly, truly safe players, I can't classify him as a truly safe player. He's a guy who's going to be entering his second season. He's obviously shown flashes of being elite, but he's entering, it's a season with a brand new quarterback, a brand new offensive coordinator. I look at things, if you look at them just from a stability perspective, like, I want to look at players that I'm taking with my really early picks who were productive last year and nothing changed. That's ideally what I want. Like, their situation didn't change. I mean, of course, you argue that Garrett Wilson's situation has improved tremendously going from Zach Wilson to Aaron Rodgers, and it absolutely has. But I'm not arguing whether Garrett Wilson's going to be better than last year. I'm just saying, if I'm looking for my wide receiver one that I'm going to feel immaculate about heading into the season, I would rather have Jalen Waddle than Garrett Wilson, just because I know what I am getting. I acknowledge that Garrett Wilson's upside is massively above Jalen Waddle's. Absolutely. I think Garrett Wilson has the potential to finish as a top three wide receiver. But again, call me scarred from last year. Chasing the guys that have top five potential is how you also end up with guys that bottom out. I don't want to sound that dramatic for Garrett Wilson, because I don't think it happens with him. But he is a guy that, like, if I look at guys ranked around him, I'd rather have the ones whose situations didn't change. So he's a guy that, like, can win you your league or maybe lose your league. I don't know. It's a weird situation with Garrett Wilson, but I do love the talent, and it'll probably work out, to be honest with you. Running back wise on the Jets, Pat, Breece Hall, I don't know how to treat him, because taking running backs coming off of torn ACLs is incredibly tricky. We've very rarely seen it pay off, getting a guy in his first year post-recovery. Obviously, you know, medical technology is always getting better, and maybe he'll recover. He's But all these players say they feel good, right, heading into the season and during the offseason. So Breece Hall at RB10 right now, little too rich for me.
His ceiling is definitely there. I feel if all works out well, Breece Hall will be a running back one. But I'm not worried about like his competition terribly. Like, we know Rodgers loves to throw to running backs. That's kind of what Michael Carter does. But Hall was getting that was part of what was making him so good and fantasy relevant last year, that he was catching the ball like crazy.
Yeah.
And I think what's going to help him too is that this is an offense that's going to be scoring a lot more. You know, they're going to have more red zone goal line opportunities with Aaron Rodgers than they did with Zach Wilson or whoever else was under center last year. I'm not worried about Michael Carter. I'm not worried about Bam Knight. But it's all, again, similar to Tua. It's just a health thing. Like, with this guy as a player, I'm not concerned in the slightest. But it's just like, is the health going to be there at 10? No. But if he's my RB2, I'm thrilled.
Yeah, I agree. I look at the guys being drafted behind him right now on Underdog, and you've got Ramondre Stevenson directly behind him. Rather have
Absolutely,
Ramondre
yeah.
as he stands right
Absolutely.
Now. I'd rather have Travis Etienne. I'd rather have Jahmyr Gibbs. I think I'd rather have Najee Harris. It's close. It gets closer once we get here.
Yeah,
he is. But see, that's where offensive line, and he's still the only guy. So
I agree about Stevenson, and I agree about I don't even remember who the second guy you said was.
Etienne.
Agree about those two. But then when you get into the Gibbs Harris territory, that's when I'm just like, okay, like maybe, like that's where I'm starting to think about it. So like, I'd say like I'd probably, like I said, even if he's a high end RB2, if I'm drafting him in a draft and he's the RB13 or 14, cool.
Yeah, I feel that.
Or if I'm drafting him as a late end RB1 and getting another one to go right with him, I'm cool with that too.
I mean, yeah, RB13, 14 puts him right at Gibbs Harris territory, which is where I'm more comfortable taking him. I'm just like, I want to nail the first few rounds. And this is not from me being scarred last year by Pitts and these other picks, because this is a strategy I've tried to have forever. I just went a little off track last year with making sure you nail your first like two picks at the very least. Like your guys who are going to be producing the most of your points, other than your quarterback position, which is disproportionately scoring a lot of points. The guys who are going to anchor your team, you want to make sure you nail that pick. And I just don't feel great about taking a guy off a torn ACL and trusting him to do that. So if he can be my early third pick, early third rounder, great. And with the way that wide receivers have bumped guys down, I mean, I think that's actually based on Underdog. I think he's in that range. He's so 28.8 ADP. That is right around where he's going, actually, early third, because you got 12, 12. That takes you to 24. Mm-hmm. Then early third rounder. I guess I'm okay with him at ADP right now. Maybe, you know, take him a little lower than that. But overall, I just trusting a guy coming off a torn ACL is a tough ask. I'm staying away from Javonte Williams this year as well, personally, unless he falls really far. There's just better options and safer options that I'm less worried about tanking my team with an early pick. You know, give me the guys that have shown it for a few years and haven't gotten hurt. And the tight end position with the Jets, don't worry about it. Tyler Conklin, CJ Uzomah, don't care. One of them might be okay, but at the end of the day, it's
Conklin
gonna be
played
the,
great last
probably
year. But Rodgers has not thrown to tight end since Jermichael Finley.
Right.
So like
It's probably going to be the Garrett Wilson, happen. Lazard, Davis show, whoever. It's not going to be going through the tight ends
Again,
too often. So
when you're desperate in a streaming week, you very well may see Tyler Conklin in your lineup. But at the end of the day, he's not someone that's going to be consistently on a week-to-week basis.
True. So that's our AFC East breakdown. Guys, the main question I have for everybody listening, because it's the main guy I went back and forth on even as I was talking about him, I want to know what everybody thinks about Garrett Wilson. Let me know, because is he a guy that you are completely buying into the upside and, you know, the flashes we saw last year? Or is he a guy that makes you nervous just because things have changed and you don't know how they're going to gel? I'm leaning a little toward that side while also acknowledging that, you know, that could make me miss out on the next great wide receiver. I fully am aware that that's where Garrett Wilson could be heading. So I'm curious your guys' stance on it.
And I'm definitely leaning the other way, and I've said it before, but I think Wilson is probably, outside of Davante Adams, is probably the most talented wide receiver Rodgers has had in a long time.
Yeah. And that's quite likely true. All right, Pat, into our favorite part of the show.
Yeah, Jermichael Finley was a great segue.
Jermichael Finley was a great segue for this. Honestly, might be slightly overqualified.
Not on my list. Overqualified, in my opinion. Not on my list.
Overqualified, same. Last week, we did the random wide receiver draft. We are going to do a random tight ends draft. Again, as always, the goal is to make you say, what the fuck? Why are you putting that name in my ears? Why do I remember that guy? That's
so
ridiculous.
Good, man.
So Pat, I told you this off camera that the pool of random tight end candidates was better than I anticipated. I felt like this position, just falls by the wayside more than others, especially in a fantasy, POV. That there would be guys that I didn't feel good about, like, oh, this is going to make somebody laugh that I brought his name up. But as I went through it, I was like, man, tight end is almost a gold mine for this kind of
thing. My list is over 30. We're picking five. I'm supposed to pick five guys out of 30. Like, what the hell?
Yeah, I'm not going to count them all. I'm at like 25, it looks like. So
yeah, and there were a lot of guys, and there were honestly guys that I probably didn't put on my list because they were either a little too relevant or just like completely like Lester Jean levels of irrelevant. But
don't shade my Lester Jean pick.
But that's the thing is that like with tight ends, especially with the inconsistent nature and the streaming nature of fantasy football, we are going to bring up some old scars with people because just looking at this, I've started a lot of these guys.
Oh, I think I started all of them.
Whether as like somewhat regular starter or just on a week, and a lot of them have burnt my ass to a crisp. This is going to be fun.
All right. There's a few guys here. I believe I have the first pick on this you one do. After you had the first with Mike Sims-Walker last week. Is it bad that I don't even know who I want with my first pick? You know what? I feel like
I do know who I want.
You do. Okay. Let's see if this, it's funny. There's almost a mix of guys who also weren't ever fantasy relevant, but were just, everybody knew who they were. And I have them on here as well. But I'm going to go with a guy who was supposed to be fantasy relevant, supposed to be good. Classic hyphenation here with our first overall pick. I'm going to go with Austin Seferian Jenkins. I think he's an easy 101 for this kind of thing. He's the guy everybody brings up as, man, I swear I thought that guy was going to be good, and he was not.
Yeah, he was on my list. He's the epitome of this. I was not going to pick him first. Now I'm kind of concerned that the guy I'm about to pick might be a little too good. Let me give his stats a quick check. I already checked this today. Let me give him a quick look just to make sure I'm not.
Pat's got to make sure he doesn't have over like 600 career receiving yards because that would just be he'd be too good.
Oh, this guy's got about 2,000 career receiving yards.
I think I know who you're going to pick then. I think
this guy was one of my favorites back in the day from Madden, like in the like early 2000s.
I definitely know who this is.
It's not Owen Daniels. It's not Owen Daniels. I loved Owen Daniels. He's too good for this. I'm going to go Vasante Shanko.
That's who I thought it was. Mm-hmm. I looked at his numbers earlier.
I loved me Vasante Shanko back in the day.
I almost put him down. I thought he was a little too good. That's the only reason I won't dock you too much for it. He never really like broke out as being crazy good, but like he had an 11 touchdown season, I believe. I remember from looking at his stats, it was like 2,200 yards, 27 total touchdowns. So nothing insane. But he's a guy. He was the guy that like back then, you had your elites of Tony Gonzalez, Antonio Gates, whoever, and then just always lurking was Vasante Shanko. Not that he was a tier below elite. He was probably a couple tiers below elite, but he was still one of just the names of that era. So it's a good pick.
Again, the way I see it is like he was a guy I kind of just forgot about. And like that one made me smile, not because like it was funny, but it was like, oh man, like, yeah, like Vasante Shanko, like that's right.
Yeah. Vasante Shanko is a good pick. Pat, I'm going to go back to the well of fantasy guys who we really wanted to be good and weren't. And in fact, I'm going to go back to the Charger well from last week. I'm going to Ladarius Green here. Mm-hmm. Ladarius Green, I swore Ladarius Green was going to be the next Gronk. I swore it. And he never did it, ever, and just fell apart. So Ladarius Green, easy money.
Yeah, that's a great pick. That was a guy that I was probably targeting with my third or so pick. Mm. I'm going to go a guy who, this is more of a funny name kind of pick, but it's also, he's also relevant. I'm going to go Crockett Gilmore here at my 2-2 pick.
Good pick. A guy I put on my list sort of toward the end, I think just because I was going chronologically. I started in like 2009 looking at guys and then went. And Crockett didn't pop up until like 2016, 17.
That's the biggest thing about this one for me, too, is that like I'm really favoring like 10 years ago. Or, because the problem is that with fantasy, with tight ends being such a like terrible position, there aren't that many like guys who are like truly irrelevant within the last 5 years. Like they're all going to be guys that like you clearly remember. I always put one active guy on my list. So I do, but it's hard. Oh,
I do have one. I'm not going to pick him, but I always just have one on the list. But that's what was so hard about this is that, like, no tight end is truly irrelevant that's played in, like, the last 3-4 years because, like, at some point we've had to do it.
Yeah, I get that. Everybody's started for our damn fantasy teams at some point. All right, Pat, in terms of tight ends who are irrelevant and forgettable and you're just like, what the fuck? I'm going to take Kyle Pitts. No, I'm not. I'm just kidding. I'm going to take Jacob Tammy.
Oh, man.
Jacob Tammy, a guy that was just paired with Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck, I believe, across his tenure with the Colts. And so he was relevant in that regard.
And then he went back to Denver and played with Manning again.
Yeah, that's right. Jacob Tammy, I actually have no clue what his career stats look like. I just saw his name and I was like, oh, I have to put him on here. Because
he was one of the first, like, before I actually even looked, he was one of the first guys I, like, thought of.
Yeah, so Tammy was with the Colts from 08 to 11, career numbers of 2,570 yards and 14 touchdowns. So yardage-wise, he was pretty solid. I mean, he had a couple years of 600, 500, and, you know, just played with some damn good quarterbacks in his time. But he himself, it's a name that I just think – I can't even say he's a guy that I thought he'd be better than he was. It's just a guy that unnecessarily got paired with really great quarterbacks, and so you just kept hearing his name, and it was really funny.
He's the Austin Collie of tight ends.
Right,
exactly. Which is a guy I'm upset that was not brought up last week. I thought of him when I thought of Jacob Tammy today. That was disappointing. But
name concussion, but yes.
All right. You know, you went with Austin Seferian Jenkins, was a Patriot, so you're repping your brand. I'll go a Raider here. I'll go with Clive Walford. I feel like he fits another one of those guys that, like, was thought that he was going to be good, and he just was not.
Our buddy Dan was a big Clive Walford guy. I remember him yelling Clive at me. I think he started him for probably 3 weeks straight hoping that he would be good, and it didn't materialize much. Like,
and that was when the Raiders were really fucking bad. So, like,
yeah. You're just trying to find guys that in that just absolute shit storm that are worth a damn, and just you were better off looking elsewhere. Okay, I think I know who I'm going here, Pat. Now we have Travis Kelce in Kansas City, but once upon a time we had Tony Moyaki.
Tony Moyaki, in Kansas City.
And I'm going Tony Moyaki.
He was actually okay.
I feel like he was okay fantasy-wise for a while. Again, a guy that was just, you know, that tier below being consistently startable, but a guy nonetheless that you always had on your radar and probably took with your 14th round fantasy pick a few times.
Oh, see, this one is hard for me now because I know what I'm doing with my last pick, assuming it doesn't happen. But so this is basically my last pick here. So, like, I need to decide what I'm... You know, I'll go in this direction here. This is a guy who was fantasy relevant. It seemed like this was a guy who, for a season, just caught two touchdowns every other week. I'm going to go with, and he had a great touchdown dance. Give me Joseph Fourier.
Oh, yeah. Joseph Fourier. So, fun fact, Pat, I think I still follow his Pomsky on Instagram.
His what?
Pomsky is a breed of dog. It is a Pomeranian Husky. And when Joseph Fourier burst onto the scene, I don't remember how I stumbled upon his Instagram page, but he just had a page strictly for his Pomsky, and it was really cute. And so I followed it. I haven't seen any posts in a long time. Maybe I either unfollowed it or the dog, you know, potentially RIP. I have no idea. This is the first time you've unlocked a memory for me.
And I remember, yeah, I just Mitch, remembered our, that. Our buddy Mitch had him the year where he was just catching two touchdowns, and he was always in his lineup when he's catching two touchdowns. It's like, stop it.
Mitch, for what it's worth, we had to kick out of our league due to general inactivity, but he had Joseph Fourier just locked
only
in there
guy
every
that's
week.
Been booted because of inactivity.
Yeah, so it's tough, but look no, that's though. A great pick with Joseph. Fuck. It's a great pick with Joseph Fourier. The dance was amazing. Lions legend. You know, more memorable Lion than even Brandon Pettigrew, I would argue.
He was too relevant Brandon for me.
Pettigrew. Yeah, same. All right, Pat, I'm between two guys here, and it's really, like, tied for me. I either go funny name or another fantasy guy that you might be like, damn, he was actually kind of decent for a while. But I think I'm going to go funny name.
We all know who you want to take, Brandon. Take him.
Do you know who I want to take?
I think I do.
I'm taking Michael Humanawanui.
Of course you are. Yep.
Yeah. I got to take Humanawanui. I think the trend of all my picks so far have been guys who were at least on the cusp of fantasy relevant. He basically never was. No, but he was a guy that we all knew existed strictly because his name has 35 syllables in it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure.
I'm very curious to see where you're going here. Oh,
who's the other guy that you were between? Who was the guy you're going to take?
CJ Fedorowicz.
He was the other one. He did not even make my list.
Really? Like, you thought he was too good, or you just didn't think of him?
I saw him, and I just like it didn't register in either direction. Like he was a guy that was not memorable enough in any direction for me to actually pick.
Well, in your eyes, I made the right pick here.
Yeah, and now I got to do my thing where I run down some of my options. A Houston Texan that I did almost take was Joel Dreesen. He was a guy that was always just like on the cusp. A few other guys who were on the cusp, Larry Donnell, Rob Hausler, Chris Herndon, more of a recent pick. My active player is Mo Alie-Cox, and as well as Ricky Seals-Jones is another guy that was recently retired. Got to give a shout out to my
follows me on Instagram. So what's up, Ricky?
Love that. Big fan. my dad always just calls him Ricky Seals and Crofts because there's like a 70s band, Seal and Croft, and they have this song, Summer Breeze. It's a good song, actually. But that's always – I got to give a shout out to my favorite tight end ever, the forgotten catch of that Super Bowl against the Patriots, Kevin Boss. He had a huge catch that helped them win that game. A little too good for me. I still have his jersey, I believe. I should have worn it for this. That
was folks, so we're at the point where Kevin Boss is too good for our tight end list. If that doesn't tell you how hard we're working to bring you truly absurd names, I hope you appreciate
and
it.
And then now, a few funny names. Levine Toy Lolo, Philip Supernaw, Billy Badgema, Algie Super Crumpler. Nice. Like, these are guys that... and then a quick shout-out. This site that I was using... they had Tim Tebow and Kelvin Benjamin listed as tight ends, like even seasons where they weren't. Like it was like fantasy production, and Kelvin Benjamin would lead the league every year in it. And same
it's
deal.
Like they, it's like they adjust it, then they can't like go back and make it where they were a wide receiver for a little, and then
or they might just be trolling. I think they're trolling.
And then I saw Devin Funchess as a tight end, like even in the years where he was a good receiver with Carolina. So yeah.
And also shout out to the Taysom Hill and Jalen Samuel Yahoo controversies with their tight end eligibility.
Taysom fucking Hill, man.
And Tim Tebow, but I'm going to actually do a 2-for-1 here somehow. And I don't think there's going to be a way you could call me out on this. I'm picking Zach Miller.
Oh, my God. You bitch. All right. You know what? That's a good pick. I am upset because I know what you're doing, the Bear and the Raider, Zach Miller.
Just two guys. Zach Miller on the Raiders was actually pretty decent. Like he was another one of those guys that might be a little too relevant. And then other Zach Miller, obviously just because his whole leg almost literally exploded. that's one of the most memorable, gruesome injuries ever.
But fuck, yeah, that's true.
I just think the fact that there are just two Zach Millers who are quite indistinguishable, and I think that's just the perfect. So on your little graphic, I wanted to say Zach Miller (S).
Exactly.
You don't know which one I picked.
X2. Yeah, just whoever.
You don't know which one I picked.
It's funny. I just did a YouTube video recently where I mentioned Raiders Zach Miller because I was doing a redraft of every number one overall pick in history. And of course, the Raiders, I was going to undo their Jamarcus Russell pick and give them Calvin Johnson. And I was like, hey, this will give them a receiver because their leading receiver across this time period was Zach Miller, actually. He led them in receiving yards. It's only with like 760 yards, so I see why you're like, you don't know if he's too relevant or not. Team's leading receiver, but barely had any yards still. So, good pick. Wait, creative pick. I'm pissed.
If you Google Zach Miller tight end, you get like both of their Wikipedia headshots. Like, Google Zach Miller tight end right now.
Oh, my Zach Miller. Even Wikipedia is just like, it's just the same guy. Oh my God, you do. Wow.
So which one is older?
That's incredible.
So one's a year older. Who's who? I'm assuming the Raider is older. No, the Bear is a year older. And the Raider Seahawk one.
This is trippy to look at. I don't like this. All right, I'm going back.
I'm glad I did this. I'm glad.
I am as well. That's a solid pick. Pat, I'll run through some of my extra tight ends that you didn't mention either. So obviously we have Michael Humanawanui, but we also had his evil twin, Brandon Manumaliuna, as a tight end. potentially even less relevant than Michael Humanow knew he was, but I had him on there. Guy I wrote down just for posterity, but I think that we all know is too relevant. Much like the Peyton Hillis not being eligible for running backs, ironically the same team, Gary Barnage. I think everybody knows that he was a super duper 1 year wonder, but everybody remembers the 1 year. So he's not irrelevant enough.
I had him down, but he was not a guy I was going to pick.
Yeah. Same. I've got Ed Dixon on here. Always thought he would be a little better than he was. Bear Pasco. Dennis Pitta, Scott Chandler. Can't forget Scott Chandler.
He was a little too good for me. I didn't put him on my list. Yeah. I didn't put him down.
Kobe Fleener.
Same deal.
Yeah, maybe a little too relevant. And one guy I had that was just, it was like a tight end handcuff, so I thought it was funny. Every time Jimmy Graham went down, Pat, who stepped up? Josh Hill stepped up.
Josh Hill, the original boy tight end Hill in New Orleans. People forget.
Exactly. Before Taysom, we had Josh. Josh, I think, was actually still around until semi-recently, too. So the guys, those were the extra tight ends I had. We'll run down the list again, and of course, we'll compile this and let you guys decide whose list is better. Pat may have aced me by having essentially six draft picks, but nonetheless, valid. I've got Austin Seferian Jenkins, Ladarius Green, Jacob Tammy, Tony Moiaki, and Michael Humanow Inouye. Pat has Vasante Shanko, Crockett Gilmore, Clive Walford, Joseph Fourier, and Zach Miller X2. So solid draft all around. Let us know what draft you want us to do next. I'm going to just try and do one of these every week. We can do stuff even beyond just like players. We can do quarterback receiver duos of years past, or even most recent one. We can do serious drafts maybe one coaches. Day if that ever sounds like fun. Coaches of the past. Oh my God.
Urban my idea, I've ran this by Brand, but my next big idea is backup quarterbacks. Not random.
Yes.
Just who are the best clipboard warriors
in
the league. No,
I remember, I think Maddie and I, that was actually one of the only drafts Maddie and I did. It was during the season, and it was the best backup quarterbacks that were currently backup. But, like, the backup quarterback roster has changed now far as who's going to be backup coming in this year.
The last 15 years.
Oh, last 15. Okay, so we're going all the way back then. Perfect.
Yeah, just like we've done with these ones. Just
perennial
backups.
So the backup quarterbacks of history. I love it. All right, I'm taking Alex Miranda, my number one overall pick. All right, that'll actually do it for the football section of the pod. We just have a little bit of basketball to end it out with. And actually, I guess I lied. We have viewer questions that are football related. But, Pat, I want to just talk about this really quick. Ja Morant, what are we doing? Like, I can't go through a podcast without talking about maybe the most relevant sporting news of the past week. This dude gets suspended for waving a gun around on a live video in Colorado, ironically enough, months ago, and then apologizes and then does it again. What are we doing? Why? And I see people trying to defend him too, like, oh, why are his friends recording him? Why is he, you don't know how he grew up. Guys, I don't care. Stop. Do anything else other than play with guns in public. Like, you want to be a gun aficionado? Do it at home and don't be recording. Like, what are you? I don't get it.
Especially that he knows he's done this before and gotten in trouble for it. And it's like that he knows that, they're talking about significant suspension. I honestly think it's going to be like a minimum of 30 games. Honestly, like we're talking a big chunk of the year. And it was bad enough to the point where like a team that was competing in the Western Conference, they were, one of the top teams in the conference, was still willing to suspend you despite how good you are and how important you are to that team. They were still willing to suspend you. Granted, it wasn't like he was doing anything super dangerous. It wasn't like he shot himself in the leg or, it was like in a real public place with it. But it's just like, you got to know, man, that's not going to fly with your employer. You can talk about two-way nonsense, whatever. I don't care. Your employer can do what they want. And if they don't want you doing that, and you know that they don't want you doing that, you just can't do it with what you have on the line. If he was not as good as he was, he'd be cut. They would have just caught him. But the fact that he's Ja Morant is going to give him this leeway, and he's going to have to do more than go to a little, weekend long training session in Florida or whatever, sensitivity training. This is going to have to go beyond that.
It's a PR nightmare. And when you're a player as good as Ja, you also have a level of responsibility, whether you realize it or not, that you are a role model and a face of the league. You don't have to, be kissing babies and volunteering at soup kitchens every weekend as far as being a role model goes, but you have to do the bare minimum, which is don't be a public idiot repeatedly.
Stay out of trouble.
And it's made so much worse by the fact that it's the second time now, because not only does it show that he's immature and makes bad choices, but also that he doesn't care and he's not sorry. He made an apology,
also so
and he's
recently.
Obviously not sorry. Yeah.
So close together.
It's just silly. It's a real shame to see because he's one of my favorite young players in the league, but it just, he obviously has a lot of growing up to do. Hopefully the suspension sets him straight, but I was just bummed out to see that. I had to touch on it because,
yeah, that was, again, that was my thought too, was just like, oh, come on. Like,
just shock. I was just very surprised that he would do that again, knowing what a bad idea was. Like you're on Instagram Live, dude. It's not like you don't see somebody pointing a camera at you when you're doing this. Like, stop.
Yeah. Also, his friends got to know not to do that as well. Like, you know, if this guy gets caught with this, then he's going to be in big trouble. It's like, put the goddamn camera away.
Yeah. It just reminds me, there was a TikTok that went around recently, and it was like a guy pretending to be an athlete. He's like, man, I got a really nice house. I'm supporting my family. I'm living good. I'm going to be a thug. I'm going to go to jail. Like, just for no reason. He's just like, I'm going to go to jail. Like, all right, dude. Sure, I guess. So, this job, I'm going to get suspended. I'm going to wave guns around on IG Live. Stop. Please stop. All right, staying with the basketball theme, Pat. This is obviously an NFL podcast. We don't talk about the NBA too much, but we are getting down to the nitty-gritty here, and this is where everybody's kind of got their eyes on it. The NBA Conference Finals are arriving very shortly. The teams are set. This is a rematch, two rematches of the bubble playoffs of 2020. Everybody asking, you know, where's bubble Jamal Murray at? Well, bubble Jamal Murray is now in a very comfortable setting here against the Lakers. Granted, that series did not go well for the Nuggets, but hopefully he gets some bubble flashbacks and, you know, can be the guy that we saw there based on the matchup alone. Oh, that's right, Pat. We're technically feuding.
We've got
here,
a little bit of
a
rivalry here. Shall we place a wager of sorts on this?
We will need to figure out some kind of wager. I completely forgot you were a Laker fan.
Yeah, wow. I forget too.
Fuck you, pal. I'm going to cancel the podcast. I'm kicking you. Where's Maddie? I'm bringing Maddie back.
Nah, that is going to be a fantastic series. I think whoever comes out of that is probably going to win the title. Jokic, I mean, has been overshadowed by how good Jimmy Butler is, but he is playing out of his goddamn mind. Yeah. And the thing, though, is probably one of the only guys who could stop him, or not even stop him, but just compromise him, is a healthy Anthony Davis.
Sure.
If Anthony Davis can stay healthy and play well, that will be the key to the Lakers. You know what you're getting from LeBron. And D'Angelo Russell's played fantastic. Mm-hmm. You know, it's at the point where they're probably going to keep him next year instead of pursuing Kyrie. And I think they should. Because they've done a great job building that team in the second half of the season. And it's a different, you know, one game it's him, one game it's Dennis Schroeder, one game it's Austin Reeves, Lonnie Walker.
I was going to say, they've got these random guards that
Rui
Hachimura
as well
out of nowhere.
Nice moments.
Like, yeah.
That's the one thing. I just think they're a lot deeper. Like, you look at Denver, and it's just like, outside of Jokic, and Murray's playing well too, outside of that, it's just like, it's just not as much. But again, that may be too much. That still might be too much. But
yeah.
I think for the sake of bias in reality, I am going to pick Lakers in seven. But I think it's just going to be fantastic. Like, I cannot wait.
I think it's going to be a great series as well. Of course, I'm going to go Nuggets in seven. That game will be in Denver, should it come down to a game seven, obviously, with the home court advantage. And that the Nuggets, so I understand the depth thing. The Nuggets don't necessarily have a ton of depth with their scoring. I mean, KCP went off for like 30 points in the closeout game, but they don't necessarily have consistent bench scoring. What they do have, though, is consistent bench effort, hustle, and defense. And those are not things that they had the last go around against the Lakers. You've got Christian Brown playing out of his mind. You got Bruce Brown playing out of his mind. Name spelled completely differently, but spent the same. They look exactly alike. Those two guys are just defensive menaces. KCP has been good. And Aaron Gordon has to be the biggest difference from 2020 that he's on this roster. Yeah, the Nuggets, if they get by the Lakers, I think they will bring it home. I agree with you. Whoever wins this series, I think wins it all. All due respect to the Celtics and the Heat, I just don't know that those two teams are quite as good as the two teams in the West. But I guess if I have to pick in the East, I'm going to go with the Celtics. I think they end this little, you know, miracle run of the Heat. I say miracle run just because they're the 8 seed, but ultimately they've been in this spot before. And so we shouldn't be that surprised. I do think it's crazy how the two conference finals are. It's what, the Nuggets are the 1 versus the 7, and then it's the Celtics. The Celtics were the 1.
I believe they were the 2.
Right?
I thought the Bucks were
the 2. Oh, okay, you're right. The Bucks were the 1.
Yeah, so it's the Bucks lost to the Heat. Yeah.
That's right. So it's the 2 versus the 8. And so it's just like you've got these super high seeds that you expect, and then these crazy lows. It's been a very interesting playoffs. But
I'll
conference finals.
I'll also go Celtics just because, like, Jimmy Butler has been phenomenal. Like, is there a guy that has played as better? Like, it's not to say Butler doesn't play well in the regular season, but he just goes so far above and beyond.
Yeah.
You know, like I honestly probably like in the last handful of years, Kawhi Leonard's the only guy I could think of who's a better playoff performer than Jimmy Butler. But you look at a guy like Tatum who can just pop off. A lot of nonsense. People, these Jason Tatum takes it like, oh, he's like the third best player in the league. It's like, my guy had 7 points on 7 field goals the other day, and they won. It's like, stop it. Like, people are saying he's like a better scorer than Devin Booker. It's like, stop it.
No.
Stop it right now.
Just because he has the ceiling of it doesn't mean he's
consistent. He is, exactly. But he is phenomenal. He's still only like 19 years old, if you ask Celtics fans, so he's got at least another 15 years left. So, like, but he's fantastic, and I think he's the guy to possibly shut Butler down. And Butler doing it, you know, without Hero. Bam hasn't played terrific. He played better in the last series, but I think that I do think the Heat's run is going to end here.
Yeah, I think I'm picking just the opposite conference finals winners of the bubble. Last time it was Lakers Heat. I'm going Nuggets Celtics. I think the universe is going to push it the other direction this time. And Nuggets Celtics again, if that finals occurs, will be civil war between me and half of my friends.
Oh, so I was going to say, a lot of.
I'm fighting with you already. I didn't expect to have to do this early, but of course,
I'm going to go with I'm going to go with like the NBA Dream Finals, the 1980, the Boomer Dream Lakers Finals.
Lakers Celtics,
man. That would be fun. But I think like the Nuggets have been almost overlooked, like not written off, but the fact that they were the one seed the consensus favorites, like the fact that the Suns and the Lakers were playing as well as they did at the end of the year, being lower seeds, people just kind of wrote the Nuggets off. But Jokic has just been, I just said it, but he has been unbelievable what he's been able to do this postseason.
It's the formula, and I said it before the playoffs started, it's the formula for the Nuggets getting overlooked, is you have lower seeds who are historically more proven teams, or at least in the Suns' case, a team with more star power on it, maybe. And so it's just the trendy pick to be like, the Nugget, what have they ever done? They're the ones, who cares? Somebody's going to upset them because people love picking upsets, and it was an obvious upset pick to latch yourself to, even though if you've watched the Nuggets all year and tracked anything about them, you know that they were the best team coming into the Western side of the playoffs. The Lakers are on fire, which is why they could very well end this run for the Nuggets, but going to be an incredible series either way. Same over in the East, which is, I just think it's wild that we're expecting such competitive series from, again, the 1 versus the 7 and the 2 versus the 8. So going to be a really cool series. We'll figure out some kind of wager. Maybe I'll have to send something Nuggets related your way, and you could send something Lakers related my way. I'll have to wear it on the pod after the series is settled. So we'll figure something out, or one of us will just get naked. I don't know.
I still have no pants on, so
you do have no pants. You're halfway there.
I'm 2 articles right away from being naked.
We'll finish out with the viewer questions here. Just a couple of little NFL things. So, do you think Swift has his best year yet, or is it too much of a committee? I think as long as he's healthy, I think DeAndre Swift will probably have his best season yet. I don't know exactly what that means. I mean, he's basically been capped over the years at like 600-ish rushing yards. He's always towing right around 1,000 all-purpose yards. So I think he will probably have his best year as long as he's healthy, because he's been in committees in the past. I mean, he was just in a committee with Jamal Williams. It's really nothing new for him. The touchdowns probably won't be there because of Jalen Hurts, but yardage-wise, I don't see any reason in such an efficient offense that he shouldn't, you know, manage some career highs as long as he's on the field.
Yeah, agreed, basically, that it was clear that last year that he was the 1B of the committee with Jamal Williams. I think he's going to be the 1A. And again, we have not seen Rashad Penny stay healthy. I've sung his praises. And again, I think that he's going to be great. You know, I think they're going to be a real two-headed monster if he's healthy. But I think just based on the fact that he hasn't really, and he's also a way better pass catcher too. Like, and he's also, I'd rather have him getting the passes than Kenneth Gainwell. Yeah. So like, I think he's really going to excel there. I think both can be true, that he's in a committee, and yes, he is still going to have the best year of his career.
Yeah, I mean, Miles Sanders ran for like 1,200 yards last year. And granted, Miles Sanders, like DeAndre Swift is coming in with the same competition Sanders had plus Penny. So it is, you know, a little more crowded. But
that O-line's fantastic.
If Sanders can get to 1,200 yards, I don't see any reason Swift can't get to borderline 1,000 or at least get over 900, which will beat out his career rushing totals by a lot, or his career high. And finally, who is going to be the best rookie? This question coming from Alan Gonzalez. So I amended this question to be who we think is going to be the best rookie outside of Bijan Robinson and Jahmyr Gibbs, because I feel like we're both in the boat that just based on the workload they're expected to get, they're obviously going to be 1 and 2 as of right now. Yeah. So who do you think will be the best rookie outside of them, be it fantasy production or however you want to interpret it?
I went with this guy as my second pick in our rookie draft. I'm going to go Jordan Addison here. I think that
even alongside Justin Jefferson, I think there's plenty of room for, and even TJ Hockenson, I think there's enough room for all three of those guys to get good work. And honestly, I think Jefferson's going to benefit him because he's going to be getting their the double coverage. He's going to be getting their number one corners. And I think it sets up for Addison to have a really nice year. Obviously, you know, I don't know if we're talking like a fantasy stud, but I think he's out of the wide receivers, even a guy like Smith and Jigba, I like Jordan Addison better.
Yeah, that's where I'm debating on if I want to go is with Smith Njigba. I think obviously you're looking at a situation where he becomes the wide receiver three, whereas Addison is probably the two as long as he can hop, skip, and jump over KJ Osborne there.
Which you'd think he can.
You would very well think he can, but screw it. Just for the sake of being different, I'll go with Jackson Smith Njigba. I think he's a guy that's it's such a low-pressure situation for him in Seattle and a spot where, you know, Geno playing as well as he is going to be able to make potentially a third receiver relevant. And look, if there's an injury with one of those top two receivers, whether it be Metcalf or Tyler Lockett, Lockett particularly is getting older.
Yes.
Smith Njigba has all the opportunity in the world to be a great weapon there. Came into the draft as, you know, thought of as the best receiving talent. So if he can just get the playing time that maybe Addison is going to enjoy, I think Smith Njigba will be the best rookie. Yeah. It's going to be interesting the consistency that he has for fantasy purposes to open the year. Be very curious to see what kind of numbers he's putting up just because we don't know exactly how much he's going to be playing or at least how yeah. much his how big his role is going
to be. I definitely like him better as a player, but I just don't like the situation as much. Yeah.
I would agree. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of Off the Bench, though. Thank you guys for those wonderful viewer questions. As always, let us know what kind of drafts you want us to do, what kind of questions you have for us going forward. More importantly, Pat, I'm going to set this goal right now. I mentioned our shirtless podcast goal. If any, this is not going to be something we reach immediately. Oh, if God. Any of our individual shows going forward reach 5,000 views, listens, whatever, that is when we will enact our shirtless podcast. This past episode, for reference, got just under 800. So we're reaching high here. We're reaching high.
It's pretty good, though.
800 is pretty good. I'm still very happy that 800 people are listening. And that's not even counting the 200 or so YouTube views we got and all the wonderful people following us on Instagram as well. So, guys, if you want us to do a shirtless podcast, just share this podcast all over with your friends. If you're listening at this point, we're like an hour and a half in, hour 40 minutes in. You obviously like us. Send this to the people you know who you think may also like us, and there will be a reward. There's going to be
a lot of humanity. This is not fair, though, because you look a lot better without a shirt on than I do. Like, you can't really see it completely, but I got full-on tits, guys. Like, this is not... I mean,
your camera's angled a lot lower than mine too, though, so it's fine.
If you're into that, oh, I got to point the camera just straight down on me. But
we don't even want it on your face.
Speaking of shirtless, I saw Brett drop on the Twitch stream what I'm doing this weekend because he wanted to bait me into this. I am I'm in my friend's bridal party for some reason, and the bachelorette party is this weekend, and I have hired myself as the stripper, and I'm not
beautiful.
Kidding. So I've spent over $100 on accessories, and I will be shaving my entire body from the neck down. So I guess they're going to see me shirtless, and if you guys want to see me shirtless, 500 listens, come on, folks.
5,000. We're not cheap here. 5,000. It'll take a little while, but it's more so just a reminder to share this podcast with your friends. It'll help us out a lot if you enjoy it. Just get the word out there because we're trying to be the next Pat McAfee show. We'll be the Pat Gustafson show. I don't really care what the fuck we call it if we get to that point. So
side warmer Pat.
Exactly. Being shirtless, if that helps, then it helps. And Pat, I will pay you so much money for a video of you stripping this weekend. Seriously.
I think there will be a video produced. I will.
Perfect.
Brett, if you're listening still, I think you can confirm that.
Wonderful. All right. Well, again, that'll do it for this week of the podcast. We will be back here same day, same time next week. Guys, for Pat Gustafson, I'm Brandon Carney, and we'll see you guys next time.